Wungarali Majinu, Adam Shirley, ABC Radio, Canberra Wurundjeri.
You hear a lot of talk within media and within government circles about net zero. What should the target be? By when? Who's going to accept it? What difference would it make? You might be asking yourself. And there is a genuine query as to what solutions or technology is put forward that will actually do something. What will be greenwashing? A red herring designed to look like action, which actually isn't. Basically, when the federal government reveals all this, what will be legit and what will be BS? Professor Frank Jotso is head of energy with the Institute for Climate, Energy and Disaster Solutions at the Australian National University. He's an internationally renowned climate change scientist and economist who's worked on intergovernmental panel on climate change reports previously, and he's with us on Mornings Today. Professor Jotso, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Adam.
I know it's a really simple distillation to ask what will be legit and what will be BS, but is there a way to answer that in terms of what the federal government will put forward on climate policy?
Well, we're expecting that there will be some form of commitment to net zero emissions. And if that is the case, then it's pretty much legit because greenhouse gas emissions are monitored quite reliably in most parts of the economy. And if we're committing to that, then, you know, the expectation is that many governments down the track will be held to that. And so by and large, it's a legit commitment. The question is, what will we do to actually get there?
And answer that as best you can for something that is practical and worthwhile in Australia. What do we do to try and get there and make a meaningful change?
Yeah, so there's plenty and plenty of opportunity because greenhouse gas emissions are spread right throughout the economy. And it all starts with electricity. We can, in Australia, relatively easily achieve a near zero carbon, or in fact, zero carbon electricity supply system because we've got access to practically unlimited amounts of solar power as well as wind power at relatively low costs compared to the rest of the world. And in fact, at low costs compared to what it would cost to build new gas or coal-fired power stations. That would be augmented by energy storage, so in pumped hydro and increasingly large-scale batteries are commercially competitive, and also demand-side flexibility. And what we mean by that is we'll increasingly have smart ways of operating appliances, heating, cooling, pool pumps, but also industrial installations. So we turn these things off when peak demand is happening on the grid. Now,
just on that, I mean, how close are we to doing it? I'm wondering in the context of the deliberations, and let's face it, the disagreement within federal government reaching this.
Yeah, so federal politics in Australia for some time now has been kind of behind what's actually happening in reality. So, you know, corporate Australia is by and large signed on to the idea of net zero and also signed on to the idea of stronger emissions targets by 2030 because people want to get going. So very importantly, the Business Council of Australia, really the main business lobby in Australia, last week released a report calling for nearly 50% emissions reduction by 2030 and net zero by 2050. And the reason for that is that we know this is possible and it's already happening. So every year since 2016, Australia's electricity sector emissions have fallen and have fallen quite significantly. And the reason is that we're getting a lot more solar and wind in the system, driven largely by commercial considerations. Practically all energy investment in Australia now, in terms of producing energy for domestic demand, practically all of it is renewables already.
Mm. So if that is coming online and coming online, those alternative and clean energy sources en masse, some then say, well, why need to rule on this as a federal government? Why need to put that extra imposition in place? How would you reply to that?
Yeah, Adam, and so we started with the first pillar of decarbonisation, that's electricity. But then there's, of course, all of the rest. And that is industry, that is transport, that is agriculture, that's bits and pieces of emissions throughout the system. And that is where, by and large, policy action will be necessary, because the opportunity is, once you have a decarbonized electricity supply, we can then use that electricity to power most of the processes in industry, not all of them, but most of them. We can use that for heating in our homes, and very importantly, we can use that to run our cars, ultimately our trucks and trains as well. And for that, policy support will be needed. And really, in terms of federal climate policy, what will be done for industry and for industry is the main sticking point.
Yeah, and we'll hear more on that today, potentially after these briefings for federal government are held. Adam Shirley with you on ABC Radio Canberra Mornings, as is Professor Frank Giozzo, Head of Energy with the Institute for Climate, Energy and Disaster Solutions at the ANU, and a co-author previously to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports. Nice to have your company. At 9:15, Professor Giozzo, what should anyone listening now look out for from the Energy Minister, Angus Taylor, from the Prime Minister, on the eventual announcement as far as good stuff and bad stuff?
Okay, so the key markers of any decision that will be announced, firstly, is it an actual commitment to net zero emissions by the middle of the century, or is it just a statement of intent? And you might say that doesn't make much difference for a government right here in 2021, but it will make a big difference on the international stage, and that's an important stage with the climate conference, the UN climate conference coming up next month. Secondly, is it a net zero target that actually encompasses all of the economy? Only a fully comprehensive target that covers everything and doesn't, for example, exclude agriculture makes sense. Thirdly, what about the 2030 emissions target? Our present emissions target, 26-28% reduction, is very, very weak in international comparison and extremely weak relative to the challenge. So the US, for example, now have a 50% emissions reduction target over the same period of time. We're really behind on that. And in fact, in Glasgow at the climate conference, all eyes will be on the 2030 emissions target. And then, if you let me briefly, next week's strategy. What has the federal government in hand in terms of a strategy for achieving emissions reductions? And that will need to be more than just a declaration of future technological priorities. That will need to be a basket of policy instruments and a deep analysis of what this means for the country.
Right. So should most voters expect more than the technology, not taxes line? Should they expect which technologies and when do they come online?
Well, you know, this is a politics of three-letter slogans. And if anything, then we need to say technology through markets or deployments through policy, because the idea behind this sort of technology not taxes thing has been to put the emphasis on technologies that still need some development and that may or may not emerge in decades to come. And that's important, that will be important, but what's overridingly important is to deploy the technologies that are already available and to deploy them at speed and at scale over the next 10, 15 years.
Which also goes to my last query for now. How central is a 2030 target in whatever form?
The 2030 target is absolutely central, and in the international talks, as well as in the economics of this, it is actually more important than the net zero target. And that's actually not reflected in the public debate that we're having at the moment, because, you know, we're kind of still stuck on whether and how and when we'll have a net zero target. Most other developed countries have already put that behind them, have put that in place, and are now, you know, strengthening the near to medium term efforts. I'm confident that we'll get there, but obviously the political pain involved in that road is still great.
Well, that's an interesting point as well. As a second question, the Nationals in their national party are flat out refusing a 2030 target. Barnaby Joyce has said so. How focused or concerned should we be on that?
Look, with the existing 2030 target, that will be readily achieved without much further action, and therefore will fall short of what's needed and will also fall short of the opportunities that we have to position the Australian economy properly for a low-carbon future. And so a stronger 2030 target, and then the policy action that goes with that to achieve that, right, is absolutely needed, and is absolutely needed for the business sector to calibrate their investment plans as well. And once again, you know, I mean, I don't even need to say that as an academic researcher, right? Let's just look at the at what the Business Council of Australia is calling for, and they're calling for a far stronger 2030 target. So that's really at the heart of the matter. And that's obviously also the politically most difficult thing, because that's what actually implies action in the near to medium term.
It feels like a pretty important moment in the ongoing climate wrangles of this country, and we'll see if something changes. Professor Jotso, we'll be talking in due course about a few of the different technologies that would represent meaningful change. Thanks for your time today.
It's a pleasure, Adam.